Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Wednesday, but I'm going to wish that for all anyway. We've had such a tragic last 2 weeks, and my heart is so heavy, as well as I'm sure all of you are, that we are going to pray for all of those who are suffering from all of the different tragedies within, from Memphis and from Texas. And so at this point, we are going to even make May more aware to all those that this is Mental Health Month. And I don't know if it's a coincidence or if it's just going to be just one of those months that we will never, ever forget, and we will always be more reminded of mental health during this month. But this is what my interview is for today. And I am going to introduce you to a wonderful person and friend of mine, Dr. Yvonne Gilly Wallace, who is a clinical psychologist with a minor concentration in forensic psychology. Dr. Wallace completed her graduate studies at the University of Chicago and Argosy University. Her career has spanned a career in corporate America and several years in law enforcement for Cook County and in the state of Illinois. After leaving law enforcement with the state of Illinois, she worked many years in the mental health field as a manager for therapists for a community mental health agency, psychiatrist emergency triad at the Jackson Park, St. Bernard, and Holy Cross Hospital. And we are going to have a great discussion today, introduction and informative information on mental health, so we all have a better understanding as to what it is, how we can help, and how we can be aware of some of the signs. So at this and with all of that wonderful information, it is my pleasure to bring my friend on and my guest today, Dr. Wallace. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing fine, Casey, and thank you. It is certainly my pleasure to be on, and thank you so much for asking me to come on for Mental Health Awareness Month. It is truly my pleasure to be here.
Well, I tell you, you're going to keep us all informed, and I hope uplift us on some of the things, because mental health has been viewed in so many ways as a dark subject, a dark awareness, and also just recognizing that you have a problem. And so I would love for you to be able to enlighten us on the definition of mental health, and just give us some feedback and some history on all of this that you are definitely an expert in.
Thank you so much. And I think that, what you said about the dark side of our individuality, that is what we kind of look at mental health as. But mental health awareness is a 365-day thing. It is not just important for you to look at your physical health, but you have to know that you look at your mental health also. And don't separate out the two, because it's all a part of your individual health. One in four people suffer from some form of mental illness in any given year. And with that being said, let me give you the definition so that you're really clear, because mental health is a person's condition with regard to their psychological and their emotional well-being. Now, mental illness, that is the health conditions involving changes in those emotions, thinking, and a person's behavior that impacts that individual's everyday functioning. So you can't blend the two terms. You have to look at them separately, because when you have mental health, you're functioning in good standing, and you have great psychological and emotional well-being. When there is mental illness, those types of things, your emotion, your thinking, and your behavior are impacted, and it affects your everyday functioning. Excuse me.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving us that definition, and I want you to repeat that again before we end the show, because I don't realize that we realize there's two completely different definitions and characteristics, and I think we lump it all together. So I appreciate that, and as I said, I really want you to explain that one more time at the end of the show so that we can understand and get the full impact of what you're saying. So can you – I know this is a broad question to say, but give us some ideas on some of the things that we need to – for ourselves, let's start with the individual. What are some of the signs that we should be aware of that we may be experiencing some mental illness or mental health? And I'm just going to use both of them, since I hope that both you will make the definition as you explain or answer my questions. What are some of the signs that we should be aware of these days, especially with COVID? I think that COVID, and please answer or add to, I think COVID has heightened this whole mental awareness or issues. Am I right? Do you feel the same way?
Absolutely. It has tested our mental health. It definitely has. And again, the mental health is when you're functioning well. You can go about your daily activities and you are functioning psychologically and emotionally well. But when there is an off balance in that, then that's where the mental illness comes in, because it impacts your emotions, your thinking, and your behavior. And so you're not able to function in your everyday and go about your everyday functioning. And okay. With that being said, I'd like to give you some of the mental disorders that are most common types.
Thank you. Yes.
Okay. Some common types are anxiety disorder, clinical depression, bipolar disorder, dementia, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive disorder, autism, and we're seeing now. And it's not just new to the horizon, but it's coming more in our face, post-traumatic stress disorder, because of all the different traumas that are happening in our life and traumatic experiences that are happening in our life.
Well,
so
yes.
These are some common mental illnesses that you will see more frequently than some of the others, and we'll concentrate on these as we talk about it and associate it with adults. I'd like to look at symptoms for adults and symptoms for teens and how they vary.
Okay, great. Because as you were going through the list, I was thinking of a few of my friends that I believe are having problems adjusting, thinking. And I used to think that a life coach was something that was like, oh, who can't function? Who can't think? How can you not plan what you want to do? And in dealing with some of my friends recently, I really believe a lot of the characteristics that you just named, they really are, I can associate that with them. And I never noticed it before, but I think they've just really become overwhelmed with the isolation from COVID. And yes, so thank you. So please go ahead and help us define and understand all of these different characteristics that you've pointed out to us.
Okay, and let me just give you some general symptoms for adults, and then we'll get into how these symptoms have been impacted and have become aggressive with adults and with children during COVID.
Thank you.
And what it kind of looked like, what it looks like. So with symptoms for adults, if the person is, they will start feeling sad and down. They'll have confused thinking or reduced ability to concentrate where they can't really concentrate. It's very hard for them to concentrate and focus on one task at a given time. Excessive fear or worry or extreme feelings of guilt. These are symptoms that you'll find in adults. Extreme mood changes of highs and lows. Withdrawal from their friends and from activities. They isolate. They find themselves socially isolating. They don't want to interact with their friends like they used to. These are all symptoms that you and signs that you need to pay attention to with an individual and with yourself. If you start seeing or experiencing some of these symptoms, then you want to pay attention with to them, because even more in this heightened time of COVID, we really need to pay attention to ourselves. Significant tiredness, low energy, or problem sleeping. The person can start having a detachment from reality, start to have delusions, paranoid, or hallucinations, where they are starting to experience and experiencing that they're seeing things or hearing noises that are not really there. Inability to cope with daily problems or stress. These daily little hassles or frustrations become major episodes for them, and they can't deal with the daily problems or the stress.
Mm-hmm.
Major changes in their eating habits. Either they're overeating or they're undereating. But that's a change in their normal eating pattern. Problems with alcohol and drugs. Maybe they're starting to, that cocktail or that maybe two times a week cocktail has become an everyday cocktail, and maybe two or three before they retire. But the problems with alcohol or drug use. Sex drive changes. And then you may see excessive anger and hostility or violence in the person where they never had that before. They were very calm, very mild-mannered, and now all of a sudden they explode at the least little thing.
Yeah.
And they're hostile and violent. And then, of course, suicidal thinking. When that person starts to have these suicidal ideations and suicidal thoughts, where they're wondering if it's even worth continuing in this life, and they're expressing that, and these thoughts are coming to their foreground, to their conscious awareness. These are symptoms that, these are some of the symptoms and signs that you would pay attention to with the change in the individual.
And not only the individual, but also,
yourself,
correct?
Also yourself.
Yes.
Also
okay.
yourself. There's a point that that I'd like to make, because I, you know, in my clinician circle, I have a friend that's a clinician that has started to identify some signs and symptoms. And we had a conversation not too long ago where it was time for her to rearrange some things, change some things, and do some self-help and care for herself, because she saw some of these symptoms coming.
Yes.
And so therapy has been one of the things that she has initiated, where she was the provider of therapy. Now she is the client.
Yes. I can imagine. And just a quick question on that. When we see some of these signs, from the lowest or the least professional help, when people are going through into the professional help, that this is the range I want to cover, but if a person is going through some of these different things and they're talking to a friend, is that helpful or could that be dangerous? Just the fact that they're opening up and telling. If I had a friend that was saying, not suicide. No, you know, if they were talking about committing suicide, at that point we know professional help. But can we, as just friends to some of these people who are going through difficult times, can we be a help to them to get them over the edge or to get back on the right track? Or does it always lead to professional help?
Well, if you're asking me if a friend can help another colleague,
yes,
we can. But I think that professionally, the best thing would be is to help them to pinpoint services, therapy, from someone else. Because it becomes a conflict of interest when you try to service that friend.
Okay.
With therapy, because of all of the information that you already have on that person, and you don't want that information to distort your ability to help them.
Okay. Okay.
So it would be better to recommend them to someone or just collaborate with them and say, I agree. You know, if they're saying, what do you think I should do? You know, if you recommend, I think that you should. If she had not already said to me that she had already gotten connected with therapy, that would have been my recommendation.
Yes, yes, okay.
That she seek out therapy.
Exactly, okay.
And because we're in the field, we know that, you know, you need to seek out that therapy from a unbiased individual,
mm-hmm.
a person that, you know, that has no past history with you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. A clinician of that sort, yeah.
And I would think that at that point, you're in your particular situation with the person that was a professional, they would be more inclined to tell where they are. And at that point, the other person's learning about them, so they have to be free to answer all the questions and be honest when they answer the questions. Whereas I would think if in your particular situation, it would be kind of a short version of help because you already know a lot about the person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But as
Absolutely.
A friend, you know, for someone who doesn't have the professional training, then recommendation of listening and recommending or just at that point suggesting that a person would seek professional help, would that be one of the advice that you would kind of give us to listen,
sure.
but then
sure.
also
you
say,
could,
please seek out professional?
Yes, sure. You could sit with that person, that friend, and say,
yeah.
you know, I'm observing and I'm noticing some changes in you. And
yeah.
I'm not sure what's happening, but this is what I'm noticing. And, what and you know, if you're having dialogue about it and they say, yes, this is, you know, if they are not in denial, because first of all, they've got that person has to be past the denial where they deny that there's even a problem.
Okay.
You know, because if you're hitting a brick wall if they are in denial, because they're going to deny everything.
Okay.
If you bring it to them, they're going to deny it.
Okay.
The therapy is more effective when the person has an awareness of that there is something happening and something changing and is ready to work on that.
Receive,
yes.
Okay.
And treat that, yes.
Okay.
So you've got to first get past the denial, you know. And I always say that Kubler-Ross's stages of death always work with everything that happens in our life, you know, and denial is the first stage. You deny, you know, if you get a, if you lose your job, if you get fired, if you get a pink slip, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to reject that pink slip. How dare them?
Yes.
How dare them give me a pink slip? How dare them fire me? So that's the denial and rejection first, and that's the first stage. So those, the Kubler-Ross's stages of death don't just apply to death. It applies to all types of experiences, really, that we have in life, because we go through all of those five steps.
Okay.
Of death and dying, but it's just applied to every your whatever's happening. If it's a divorce, you're going to first of all reject the idea of a divorce.
Okay.
Think about it.
Yes.
The
and
first
anger.
Thing you do, whoever brings up the subject, you're going to reject. That it's, you know, you want to do it. Even if the person brings it up, the first thing he has done is she has done is rejected the idea of the divorce.
Yes.
And then they have to get to the acceptance where they accept it, then they bring it to the other person, and that person is rejecting it. So you go through the steps of those Kubler-Ross's steps of death and dying through every experience in your life. Like I've told you, the termination, the pink slip, the divorce, changing jobs. You go through that process, and if you think about how you process the whole experience, then you'll know that you'll feel those different emotions. You will go through those different stages.
Yes.
So those are the signs that are and symptoms in adults for the issue of an off balance or a mental illness starting to occur. Now, how does that look in children? Because it looks a little different in children and adolescents. So what you might see as the signs and symptoms in children is persistent sadness that lasts for 2 weeks or more with that child or that adolescent, withdrawing from or avoiding social interaction. They used to be active in activities, and they're withdrawing from it. They don't want any social interaction. You see them going to their rooms, to their bedrooms, and they are socially isolating. They're staying away from any kind of social interaction. Hurting their self or talking about hurting their self. You might see it in cutting, where the individual or the child starts cutting themselves, or they talk about harming their self.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about death or suicide. You start hearing them talk about death or suicide. Outburst or extreme irritability in that child, where you start seeing more outbursts, physical outbursts or verbal outbursts, and more extreme irritability. Out of control behavior that may be harmful to them or to others. The child complaining of frequent headaches or stomach aches. Difficulty concentrating in school. The change in their academic performance. Their grades are going from A's and B's to C's and D's. And avoiding or missing school, not wanting to go to school. Staying in the bed, oversleep. They oversleep and they don't get up for going to school. Or they leave the house going to school and they never make it to school. These are signs and symptoms that you will see in children and adolescents.
Yes. And that's been so disheartening to me to see and to hear about these young children committing suicide. And I know because it's now we have social media, we see that on TV between, on our different platforms, that people can tell, and the stories of people committing suicide is easier now to hear about. But I just don't, it just breaks my heart to think that a child, 8, 9, 10 years old, would think mm-hmm. that life is so overwhelming at that young age to commit suicide. And I'm so glad that you're giving us those signs, because I think some of those signs you can get confused with, as we say, you know, they get to a certain age and then their personality mm-hmm. changes. They go, oh, they're just growing pains. Mm-hmm. But we really have to be more vigilant and listen and look at our children.
Mm-hmm. And you have to, because you have to understand that 6 hours, 6.5 hours a day, they're spending in the school system. So if you start getting notes from the teacher that's saying, Billy is, you know, I'm concerned about Billy's behavior, it's changing, don't ignore that. Don't
yes.
minimize that. And then
yes.
you start looking for the changes at home with that child also. You know,
okay.
if that child stops coming out to the to the great room or to the family room and interacting with other family members, and he used to do it all the time, and all of a sudden this behavior has changed. Start
yes.
paying attention to that. Don't
cry,
ignore
help.
It.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
would you say those are different signs? And crying, they're crying for help. They don't know how to express it, maybe, but then they get caught up in these different characteristics, these different change in mannerisms that you said for us to be aware of to help them.
Right. Absolutely. And now that we've established them, if we were 2018 and 2019, these would be the general signs and precautions that you take, but now we've added COVID-19,
yes.
the pandemic,
isolation,
and this economic downturn, and
yes.
how that has negatively affected people's mental health and created new complications for people already suffering from mental illness and substance
yes.
abuse.
And the isolation didn't help.
Isolation did not help. And nearly half, 45% of adults in the United States have reported that their mental health has been negatively impacted due to worry and stress over this virus.
Yes, the what ifs. What if I can't? What if I don't get a job? What am I
right.
going to do? The isolation.
Right.
Oh,
right.
it has impacted. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. It has impacted. And so now we've got COVID as another layer of trauma that we've had to deal with on top of all of the other life experiences
yes.
that we normally deal with. We've had COVID. None of us basically in this lifetime, just very few of us have experienced a virus, a national, an international virus such as this.
Exactly. Pandemic.
And so,
yes.
So this has challenged most people. And it has impacted adults, but then it has magnified the impact on teenagers and children. Because
yes.
as resilient as these teenagers and children are, they have been impacted by COVID-19 even more so, with them having to, with school closures and distant learning and the inability to interact closely with their friends, has created stress and loneliness. Because remember that children and adolescents, their go-to targeted people are basically their peers during
yeah.
this age.
Yeah.
So to be isolated and separated from them just
yeah.
magnifies what they're going through even more.
And you know, it broke my heart doing this. I don't have any children, but just my niece. They're losing, and they missed out on some of the experiences that we all have just taken for granted. A graduation, first day of school, having your best friend. You know, you always would talk to, you come home, who's your friend? Who's your best friend? And you always had a little crush on someone. These are the different things that they've missed out on that I don't know how they'll ever be able to make up. Because you can't recover, but to make up from that experience that has made us who we are, more well-rounded, I hope to say. I'd like to say that we're more well-rounded. But those experiences you need, those are the passages, that's what you do to grow up, to go from the next stage to the next stage. And they missed out on it. How do you miss walking across the stage for your high school graduation?
Right. Absolutely, and these are milestone experiences for them. So some of their milestone experiences that we in our day, in our age, in our generation had an opportunity to experience. They didn't have it. They had to modify and alter the experience, however creative their parents tried to be to give them some aspect of the experience. And as creative as the schools tried to be, it wasn't as it had been in the past and what traditionally had happened. And we keep those memories. You have memories of your high school graduation, your prom, your experiences throughout life that theirs have been altered.
Yes. They've been denied.
In some way. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because it's the smallest thing, the smallest things that you'll be able to say. Because, you know, and sitting around with people my age group, it's very common for us to say, how was your prom? You just took it for granted because everybody had a prom.
Mm-hmm.
And so now they're going to say, what did you do for your graduation? Or did you Zoom? And then who knew about Zoom, you know, during our time?
Right.
Yeah.
So
and just the experience of buying the
test. Into our awareness, and we had to learn to adjust to Zoom because that was all that we had.
Yes.
For a big period of time, we had to do everything Zoom, and we're still not out of that era. We're still doing a lot of things Zoom. Like I said, our normal has changed.
Our normal has changed. Yes, and even to the point, you know, we take this for granted or maybe don't think about it. Babies, you know, when they start to have face recognition. Well, now they're going to realize you look different. You don't have that thing over your mouth. I only see half of your face. Whereas, you know, you associate or you recognize your parents by their voice, by their eyes, by their mouth, and it's been covered up for a year, for 2.5 years.
Correct. Yes.
Things that we've taken for granted that we just don't know the effects
of their face. So think about those children that were born 2020, that year. They went through 2 years. They're 2 years old now, 2022. And what they knew about their parents was a masked face.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All you see is half. You see the eyes and you see the hair.
Right.
And you don't get to see the smiles. You know, we all are encouraged by a smile, a laugh. But when it's covered up, you have to go and see how are the eyes expressing different moods or different expressions. Mm-hmm. It keeps going on and on and on and on, the different effects that we are living through. But the mental illness and the mental health of all of us is something that we really must continue to be aware, even though May is Mental Health Month. Mental health is every day.
It's a 365-day thing. You have to be aware. And we're becoming, because of how our society has evolved and because of our experiences that we have had, in our society, mental awareness is coming more and more to the foreground, but it's not coming at a fast enough pace. You started out your talk show talking about the heaviness that you had in your heart for all the things that's happening. Mental health has got to, the awareness has got to come faster. There's got to be more dollars. There's got to be more people advocating for it. There's got to be more clinicians so that if in your audience, if you have people that are on the fence about, you know, careers and about professions and they're thinking about going back to school, let me tell you, there needs to be more clinicians.
Oh, I totally agree with you. The need, and just in my little world, I see that. I have been support for so many people in the last 2 weeks that I have prayed and prayed for strength and prayed to be able to say the right thing. And working with you, getting some knowledge about different things with mental health and awareness, it's very trying for those who seem to be stronger than the next person. And as I said, I've been a life support or a life coach for several people in the last couple of weeks. It's been draining for me, and I get through it through prayer and being still. And some of the other things that I do is just putting on bright clothes and putting on some makeup, putting on some good music, and just being still and prayerful and thankful for everything to give me strength to try to help those that are going through a more difficult time than I am at the moment. So I totally agree with you. I think we need more therapists. We definitely need those who are going to reach out and help and be sympathetic and help us.
Mm-hmm. And I'd like to share with you and your audience the increase in several mental health conditions since COVID. It's more noticeably, there's more hospital ER visits for children 12 to 17 years of age. It's increased by 31% from April through October of 2020.
No.
So where that's more children are presenting in the ER with mental health issues. Anxiety. The anxiety disorder, it has increased by 93.6% from April 20th to April over April 2019. And that's for teens ages 13 to 18. These are statistics that we have been able to generate based on this experience of COVID that we're going through. Depression has increased 83.9%.
Oh.
And from April 2020 over April 2019. And this is just for teens now. I'm just giving you teens. This is not adult statistics, but this is teens. Schizophrenia has claims for emergency department visits for schizophrenia among ages 19 to 22. And these statistics only, they deal with adults because the a diagnosis of schizophrenia is usually not given until age 18. There are some rare and there's sometimes schizophrenia is diagnosed under the age of 18, but for males, the onset age is somewhere between 18 and 23, 25 years of age. And for females, it is the onset of schizophrenia is usually from age 28 to 35. So the increase has been like 61.3% for schizophrenia with visits and presentations in the emergency room. Self-harm, like cutting, crashing vehicles, attempted suicide, has ballooned to 333.93%.
No, Dr. Waters. This is taking my breath away, and we haven't even talked, or I don't know if you have any information on senior citizens. What is the isolation done for the senior citizens?
I don't have those statistics, but I know that for seniors, it has magnified because seniors are already a specific and isolated population. That's when the senior citizens start having less activities, less movement than they've had in their prior years. So to have to be isolated, can't get out, have to stay at home, then you know that the magnification of the statistics become even greater.
Yes. Yes. And then the isolation.
And also for seniors. But, you know, there's some specific other specific populations. For veterans. A lot of I work with veteran groups, males and females. I worked with a veterans initiative, and our veterans during this COVID, and depending on if they were, what war they served in, if they were active duty and they were in a, they served during wartime. A lot of our veterans, those Vietnam veterans, World War II veterans, they have struggled through this period.
Yes, yes. Oh,
and they're already,
you know, as I said in the show, my heart is heavy for the loss of the lives through these mass shootings, and it's really just overwhelming. But now for you to give me all the, and my audience, the statistics on the different, the other categories that has been affected brings more awareness to me. And it's just such a burden on all of us. We have to just be aware. We have to pay attention. And you know, one of the things I was thinking about when we were talking about children and the anxiety, you know, one of the things that helped, that I would say helped during the times where they could get out and socialize, exercise. When they were able to go out and run until they were so exhausted, all you could do is bring them in, take a bath, and they were ready to go to sleep.
Ready to go to bed, right.
That releases that anxiety that's bottled up in them. They still don't have a release because sitting and watching a game on your iPad and it's all about violence, it's feeding that negative even more.
Absolutely. And, you know, these specific groups, and like you said, with children, we're seeing it with, now think about, let's look at teens that are in foster care.
Yes.
Because that, with foster care, you know, predictability is a stabilizing force for teens. That's what stabilizes them. So young people placed in foster care are already dealing with high levels of uncertainty, more so than other young people. And then to go through COVID, placement in foster care can be disruptive and traumatizing. It can require enormous adjusting. But adding the upheaval causes of the pandemic can increase the feelings of instability for those children in foster care. And then it magnifies a lot of their mental health that they've been challenged with because of that separation and trauma, abuse, whatever the case may be.
Yes, yes. And that's
These specific groups, you know, the everyday person that, you know, may have may have lost a job, may have be working, had to change from going out every day into society, but working from home. They have a set of issues that they're dealing with, and those specific groups like teens, foster children, veterans, seniors, then it magnifies 100 over.
Exactly. We have to have socialization. We all of us felt this, you know, this big, as if you were taking a deep breath. the first day we were mm-hmm. able to go to a restaurant and see other people. Whether you talk to them or not, you have to be able to have life around you. It's, you know, that's why it's important to have a plant, have a dog, have a cat. It's life. It's energy. And we can't generate that all by ourselves. We need to have someone else to socialize with, to talk, to exchange the good and the bad of whatever has happened to you in your day. In your daily activities. And so this is the pandemic and the COVID, because of the COVID, but this has been a curse in so many ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. It's been an experience for us, and it's been a journey that we've had to try to endure, and that's why it's important. That's why mental health awareness is a 365-day thing. That
yeah.
just as well as you look at your hypertension and your heart problems, you've got to look at your mental health.
Your mental, yes.
And you've got to not separate, you know, out these two. People, you know, I tell my students in class that, you know, the head is connected to the body. It is not a separate entity. It's all a part of the body.
Yes.
And so, therefore, you have to treat it as well as you would treat your physical health. You have to treat your mental health that same way.
Have to be aware. We have to realize you have to move. You know, we always say if you don't move, what you don't move, you lose. So you have to keep everything going. You have to have your water. You have to breathe deeply to get fresh air. You have to eat well. You have to be able to reach out and touch and know that somebody is there to listen to you, whether it's a friend or a professional. But we cannot internalize these different things. And that's another problem. If you don't reach out, as you said, it's being aware, but you have to express it. And you cannot internalize all these different symptoms that's happening. You have to express it. Let someone know.
Mm-hmm. You have to externalize it. You have to let someone know, you know, what you're feeling. And if you need to reach out, use your support network. Use your support system. You know, make a call to someone every day. Interact with someone every day so
yeah.
that you can keep bridging, you know, that communication gap and you feel like you're connecting with someone. Don't isolate yourself and shut yourself off.
Exactly. Exactly. It makes a big difference for someone to say, hello, how are you doing? It makes a big difference to be able to
Absolutely.
Just be, yeah, to say to them, how are you doing? How is
how
your
you?
Day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
and it could be as much as just if you, you know, I think during this COVID time it has helped us to be creative with connecting to sending an inspirational or text or something to, you know, if you have a group of people that you communicate, you may have a group that you, if you send out an inspirational text every day, just sending it out
yeah.
to your group. Your group may be 15 people. It may be 10 people. It may be 5. But
yes.
sending it out and getting those responses back, you know,
yeah.
and so you're communicating and you're connecting with others.
Yes.
That's a part of your mental health.
Every day you have to find joy. You have to find joy in something. It may be that you're experimenting with a new recipe and the accomplishment of that you achieved this wonderful recipe and a good meal. But you have to find joy.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, we're overcome with depression and the darkness and this black cloud that's over us with and because of COVID. So, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Find joy. Find joy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, my. Well, we're coming. I knew this was not going to be long enough for this topic because mental health awareness is one that we need to have another show. I hope that you'll come back. Because
I will come back, when Casey, whenever you want me to. I will come back.
We need you. We need you. I've learned so much. And listening to you, first of all, your voice is very soothing, that if I didn't have a mental problem or a mental illness, I want to just talk to you just to hear you say anything, because you're very soothing, very comforting, and I feel like you have concern for my issue. And so I hope my audience has felt that in your voice, and I know that they have.
Right.
Can you
and
give us...
I will give you some support networks for your audience if you'd like.
I would love that. And I would like for you also to go through the different signs that we should be aware of for the adult and for the children, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay, no problem. I can go through the signs for mental disorders, the signs and symptoms for adults.
Okay.
I'll go back through that.
Perfect.
Just to recap. Okay. So if you are, if you see a loved one or a friend or someone or acquaintance and you start seeing some of these signs and symptoms in the adult, feeling sad and down, that person is starting to feel sad. They are not their jovial, upbeat self, and you're seeing a change in them. They're feeling sad and down. You're seeing some confused thinking in your conversation that you're having with them, or a reduced ability for them to concentrate. It seems that it's hard for them to concentrate. It's hard to follow their train of thought because they're not focused on what they're saying. Excessive fear or worry, or extreme feelings of guilt that that person may be exhibiting. Extreme mood changes of highs and lows that you're seeing. And this is different. This is a different demeanor for this person. Withdrawal from friends and activities. You inviting the person to places, and you used to see the person out at different affairs and stuff, and you're not seeing them anymore. They're withdrawing from their friends and activities. The person is experiencing or presenting significant tiredness, low energy, and problem sleeping. Detachment from reality, where the person starts to have delusions or they're paranoid or they have hallucinations where they're saying they're seeing things or hearing things that are not really there. They're having an inability to cope with daily problems or stress, those just minor just minor incidents or hassles, and they seem to be magnified for the person. Major change in their eating habits, problems with alcohol and drug use. You're seeing that they're you know, having more cocktails, and they're having cocktails every day and two and three a day. Sex drive change, excessive anger, hostility, or violence. And suicidal thinking. They're starting to have these suicidal thoughts, and they're expressing them to you. And that's where you know that they're becoming more serious, because they're outwardly expressing them.
Yes.
Those are signs in adults. Now, the signs and symptoms in children vary a little bit. The persistent sadness that lasts for 2 weeks or more with that child. Withdrawal from or avoidance of social interaction. They leave the football team, or they leave the tennis team. They don't no longer want to participate in the sports that they love. Hurting oneself or talking about hurting theirself. Talking about death and suicide. That child having outbursts of extreme irritability. That child exhibiting out-of-control behavior that may be harmful to him or someone else. And then frequent headaches or stomach aches. They're complaining of frequent headaches and stomach aches. That child's having difficult concentrating, and the teachers may be the first ones to notice this, and they bring it to the parents' attention. The change in academic performance. Again, the teacher... and in the school system, maybe bring it to the parents, and the parents pay attention to that. And then avoiding or missing school for that child. Those are some of the signs and symptoms. Now, what are some of the support and resources? NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, the Chicago Helpline for that organization is 833-NAMI-SHY. So it's AMICHI, or you can call 833-626-4244. That's NAMI, National Alliance of Mental Illness. Now for children, the SAS hotline. For children up to the age of 18, but if they are wards of the state, it's up to the age of 21. The SAS hotline, it's 1-800-345-9049. That's the SAS hotline, S-A-S-S, SAS hotline. And then the crisis hotline varies from area to area and from county to county. So therefore, if you just call or go to your local hospital emergency room when you are experiencing any type of trauma or some of these symptoms is the best thing to do.
Thank you. I think that my audience has been so enlightened on all of this, the issue of mental awareness for May. I would like to thank you so much, Dr. Wallace, for being on the program today and for providing us with all the information that you have given us. It has been very enlightening to me. And so I would like to close the show with you and just say thank you so much. I hope that you will come back, and I know that you will come back. And we will bring even more information about mental awareness. So thank you so much for being on the show today.
It was my pleasure. It was my pleasure, Casey. Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, you are so welcome. So, audience, I hope that you were able to get a lot out of this show, because I sure did. And as heavy as my heart is, as I said, with the sadness of all these lives that were lost in the last 2 weeks between Texas and Tennessee, I would like to encourage all of you to at least take a few minutes just to be silent, just to be still, and send prayers and support to those who have lost their loved ones. Also, I hope that you will, if you didn't get all the information from the first time listening to this show, please feel free to listen to it again. Be aware of the signs of mental health awareness. Even though this is Mental Health Awareness Month, we realize that Dr. Wallace has said to us today, it is a 365-day obligation that we pay attention to our loved ones and that we reach out to help, and we also will encourage them to seek professional help. This is something that is not going away anytime soon. COVID has done a real job on all of us in so many different ways and so many fields that we really have to reach out and help and be supportive of each other. I hope that you will tune in again, and where I hope to bring another wonderful subject, an enlightening subject to all of you. My name is Casey Grant. This is the Fly Girl Show, and I hope that you will tune in again. Have a blessed day, have a prayerful day, and we will see you again. The call-in number, just one more time, is 914-205-5326. Please feel free to call in, ask questions, or just to join the interview. ¶¶